Roll up, ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast on earth. Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast. You'll gasp. You'll laugh. And you'll be amazed at what comes next.
Amazing.
Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano.
Hi.
And Matt Redshaw.
Welcome. Start again. How often do you say that to yourself?
Can we start again?
Yeah.
Many gigs.
Oh.
And then my producer gets in my ear and says, no, it's live.
What?
What?
Oh.
I just...
Do you have a producer at your gigs?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in a producer?
No, I'm an actual one. Speaking of in a producer, I don't know if you saw my Facebook post last night.
I don't know where this is going to go at all.
I got an email from a random email address telling me that it's they've got footage of me masturbating on my webcam. And unless I send them the paltry sum of $320, they're going to distribute it to my contacts list.
So what did you do? Just get up and distribute it yourself straight away?
On the roof.
Beat that.
Off.
That's my joke.
Oh, sorry, dude. Yeah, yeah, so...
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So someone tried to bribe you via email.
Mm.
How incredibly efficient of them. How could anyone ever take anything like that seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet people do.
Did you get the video back once you paid them?
I sent them my own. I said,
I bet this one's better
than the one that you managed to get.
Yeah, this is in HD.
Because, by the way, unless your webcam is under the desk, what are you going to see? Just me doing vinegar face.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
That it's got a name like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a loud laugh. Apologise.
I told you you'd laugh.
Yeah.
You said intro.
I didn't realise it was you telling me. I still can't hear that's your voice in the intro.
It's not.
That's what I meant. Anything happening? Anything good?
Probably. I need to prepare more, don't I, about the things that are good that have happened to me. Tell me something good.
What's that?
I don't know.
It sounds like a vocal version of the sound Seinfeld theme.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Dum, 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 dum.
And in my head... No, but isn't that funny? Because in my head, something else happens after that that isn't... and make it... So I sing, tell me something good, but then the music part that comes after that in my brain is from a Gloria Estefan song called Get On Your Feet.
I love that song.
Isn't it a good song?
It's great. She had so many killer tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it in a band.
Yeah?
Yeah. Didn't work very well.
Yeah. People can't appreciate great songs.
Sometimes they can't.
No.
Sometimes they actually can't.
No.
Why is that, I wonder? How come... Because I think it was... I mean, I don't know if it was a reasonably big hit. Maybe it wasn't. Remember when we used to do Can't Fight the Moonlight?
I still do occasionally.
Really?
Yeah. I've done it recently with...
Jesus, good.
With all the ladies I play with.
What?
All three of them.
All the single ladies?
No, none of them are single.
All the double ladies?
definitely double, yeah. Huh. We've had a go at that song.
Wow.
Because it's on my... What's that app we use to get chords?
Guitar Pro?
Yeah.
Is it Ultimate
Guitar? Not
Guitar
Pro, Ultimate Guitar. It's on there. The version's not bad, the transcription.
Really?
It's okay.
Because it's got a lot of chords in that song.
It's pretty close.
Okay, that's interesting.
But it's in order. So for people who don't know, there's this website called ultimateguitar.com, and then people work out the chords to songs and they put up the arrangements.
Because I like being helpful. It's like YouTube instructional videos.
Here's
how to change the spark plugs in your car.
It is. However, I think YouTube has a much better way of ranking whether something's relevant or competent in a sense of generally the stuff that is really good and accurate gets to the top of the list.
Do you not find that with Ultimate Guitar?
Yeah, Ultimate Guitar is very hit and miss. Even to the point of, like, oh, look, they think it's a major chord, but it's definitely a minor chord, so stuff like that.
Yeah,
but some things are very good. Some things are really good. And this one is good. Okay. So this one is also...
Within the frame of reference of one song that someone's got, like, you know, 200 five-star reviews of this chart, but then the one directly under it has got, like, 100 four-star reviews and the four-star one is better? Is that what you meant?
Occasionally.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, occasionally.
Oh, wow.
Because occasionally what happens is people click on the one that's got the most stars because it's the first one they see, oh, that must be better, and so they look at it and because they might not necessarily have the developed
ear. Is the number related to how many clicks it's got?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's not fair.
Yeah, yeah, it's not... And the thing is, it doesn't have to be the most accurate to get the most votes.
No.
Because it just has to be accurate enough for people to go, oh, yeah, that's close. Oh, that's good. And they click on it and they don't look further. So sometimes there are better versions of things. I found quite often there is a better version that doesn't have as many stars and it's better because it has all of the lyrics as well. When I say that's better for someone like me, who I quite often don't need the chords, but yeah, I need the lyrics. Like
I can hear a lot of the chords in my head, but I don't necessarily know all the words, particularly to the second verse.
Often, and since I often...
Unless it's Mr. Brightside.
Understand. Hmm. Nice. I love that. I love that they just saw that it's such a good song already that they didn't have to write another verse.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
Could you ever conceive of a time that you would do that? Here's my new song. It goes verse, chorus, same verse, same chorus... Bridgey bit.
Which is why in that song I...
No lyrics in the bridge, just some music. Yeah. Chorus.
Not with my own songs.
No.
No. I did a singer-songwriter thing night.
The fillers, I call them.
On Monday. And it was... It's so interesting to hear how just different people write songs. You know, when you've got... there's three of you in a row and you're doing song for song and... Two of the guys who were supposed to play didn't show up, so I played in both sets. I think that's mainly because I had more pedals to pack up, and so Brooke, who could have played as well, just went, yeah, I've just got a tuner. Why don't you play? and it's just, yeah, it was really interesting to see how just people approach lyric writing and chord structuring and stuff like that so differently. That's not a qualitative observation whatsoever. But yeah, when you're there, you've just played a song and then someone else plays theirs and someone else plays theirs and then it comes back to you, right, okay, now I'm going to do one. And I found myself going, what's going to fit this set of songs I've never heard? Like I hadn't heard those and now I'm like, oh, what should I do next? And we're kind of thinking, well, it's got to be an original song. It's like, oh, you know, do I do that one or that one? That's how I've found myself thinking. I'm not sure what the others did.
I'm sorry I didn't make it because I had Monday night off, but I was having a vocal rest day.
Even two of the guys booked didn't make it.
Yeah.
Without telling anyone. It didn't show.
It's fucking weird, isn't it?
We had a bit of a joke about whether it was musos or people who just happened to play music. I said, no, musos don't do this. People who happen to play music do this. Like they're not the same thing. Musos show up.
Richie Sambora did it. That's how he quit Bon Jovi. He just didn't turn up. How's that?
I heard about that. I reckon that's not true.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I reckon he said, dude, I'm out. And they were like, we're going ahead anyway. It's like, nah, like, all right, it's your fucking band. If it's your band, you sort it out. I don't know if it was... I'm taking my guitars and going home. I don't know.
Okay, interesting.
It might have. All I know is there's more to the story.
I saw RSO here.
Richie Sambora Orienthi?
Yeah. I wish he'd have quit.
Pardon?
That band.
What?
I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
It was half-assed.
Yeah, okay.
At best.
Oh, wow. That's disappointing.
Yeah.
In what way?
Free tickets and they were still too much. it didn't sound good, which is not their fault, but the band was under-rehearsed.
Was it a local band?
No.
Oh, it was their touring band.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But so what did they do? Bon Jovi songs?
They did some Bon Jovi songs. They did some Michael Jackson songs.
Yeah.
They did some Arianti songs.
Because she played in Jackson's band, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
It's all just a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, should have been. I know he's been, well, reportedly clean and sober for a long time now, but fuck, I thought he was drunk.
Oh, right.
Rambled, like chatting, ramble, but not interesting ramble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the difference I heard between somebody, a friend of mine went to see Stevie Nicks.
I heard about her.
Right, and, her, but then the week after...
aggrandizements.
Oh, and also just like telling meandering stories that didn't really kind of have a punchline. Just
who's the best artist you've ever seen, you know, with their stage banter chatting? If you can remember.
Wow, I mean, probably... Colin Hay's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's...
He's got the advantage of the accent, hasn't he? Not just his Scottish one, but he's jumping in and out of his Aussie one.
Yeah.
Is really good. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're great stories. Yeah. They're really great stories and really well told with precision timing. Like he knows how to tell a story. He's a storyteller.
And he also knows how to use a microphone when he's speaking.
Yes.
Which is another thing I noticed on Monday. So we had, you know, so I took my PA to this thing, and I mean the vocals were great. These folks could sing, right? But Brooke, who played, was the only person who you could hear talk between songs.
Right.
She knows how to talk into a microphone.
Because what were the others doing?
Oh, you know, this far from the mic, you know, like a bad wedding speech.
Okay.
You know when you give the mic to the MC are like, okay, you got to hold it to your mouth because it doesn't work down here.
Mm.
And then they all try and jump on a bit, but don't speak loud enough.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, this far off the mic. And yeah, interesting.
Yeah, okay. Who's yours?
I would have said Colin Hayes, number two. Number one is Leo Kottke.
Oh, yeah?
Like.
Really?
Same thing, but same thing as Colin Hay, but plays guitar at the same time, and not just strums the guitar, but plays Leo Kottke style, like stupendous finger picking arpeggios and stuff while just having a chat. Not like the way I do, which is play the thing, then speak some words, play some thing, speak some
words. That's dumb. I can't even drive and watch TV at the same time.
Oh, I can. I watch the footy all the time. It's great. I don't change the channel.
Tell your story later.
Okay. I don't change the channel.
No. No, because that would be dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, don't touch your phone while you drive.
When I was a kid, I used to think drink driving was just like that it was illegal because you might spill your drink.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that was the joke when we were kids. Don't drink drive, you might spill it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I didn't know. The rules about actually having... about being allowed to drink alcohol and driving in Victoria didn't change that long ago.
Because you used... Well, I remember getting picked up from school.
Oh, yeah.
By a friend's...
You've told the story.
Oh, have I? Yeah. By a friend's dad. We went through the bloody drive-thru. He picked up a few cans for the drive home. So are you not allowed to have open alcohol in your car anymore at all? Is that
I guess what your it passenger is? Can.
Okay, I don't know.
I don't know. But you used to be able to be the driver and have a beer.
Yeah.
Up until not that long ago.
Okay.
Like, I mean, in the last decade.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, you'd be shooting yourself in the foot because you know that the whole mouth alcohol thing, you get breathalyzed. It's like, well, I've only had one. Okay, but you're currently reading 2.4.
Yeah.
So you now need to sit here for some period of time
while
that dissipates. Have a glass of water.
Yeah.
Hey, I am.
Interesting.
I was playing at Crown on. So I was just checking my phone, switched to silent. professional. Sunday night.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm a friendly sort of fella.
You are?
And I bounded up to the bar. And I said, "G'day, mate," to the barman. And he said, "What can I get you?"
Yeah.
It wasn't busy. Yeah. It wasn't like, "Oh, God, I got to..." Anyway, I don't know his backstory.
And also because you're familiar because you're there all the time.
Yeah.
You feel like you're familiar because I'm here all
but
the time.
But I'm friendly as well.
Yeah.
I quite often just talk to people like that.
Yeah.
Particularly in the service industry.
You know that one bar lady, Emma, that I do the thing. I jump in front of her and go, "Hello."
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, I love it when you're here."
See?
Yeah.
And I was with a friend of mine who said she would have a gin and tonic. I said, "I have a Fayette, please. What size? Schooner?" I said, "Bigger." He said, "Pint?" I said, "Bigger than that if you've got it." And he said, "I'll get you a glass of water as well." With that face on, it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Well,
for every Matt Bradshaw is, you know,
sure. 150. Oh, no, I understood. And I mean, you bastards. Know, you don't often see responsible serves of alcohol rules being enforced that closely.
Well, there's no such thing.
Well, apparently when it comes to me, they are.
I'm so often... Because I remember doing the... Have you ever done the course? The RSA, have you done it?
No.
Okay, well, I had to do it years ago.
I haven't even done the responsible drinking of alcohol course.
Well, I had to do it years ago when I was working for Village in order to work in Gold Class. And then in order to go back to work at IMAX, because then IMAX became a license, the whole venue was licensed. So in order to work there, you had to have your RSA, no matter what you did. And so I had to... update it and do a bunch of modules online, and it's hilarious. Like as you're doing it, you just do it going, there actually is no such thing as a responsible service of alcohol. It just totally proves that giving anyone poison is a bad idea. Like, it's hilarious.
Poison?
Well, it is. It's poisonous.
Oh, come on.
What?
Don't.
No, I'm not.
How long has it been since you had a drink?
Not the point.
No, I think it is.
No, it's not the point. I was just saying, it's a funny, it's like this, like, you do the little course.
Do you like my new comeback? Shut up. That's my new one.
Did you like how I ignored it? No.
Yeah, well, that's why I had to bring it up. No, we've both been doing this since we sat down. Yeah, it's really funny.
We're mirroring each other's dominance posture.
Is that what we're doing?
I don't know. Is it?
Shut up.
Let me go get some spectacles. I call them spectacles for nothing. I mean, I know it's spelled differently, but...
Anyway, so... But he didn't get me a glass of water.
Oh, that's good.
Because then I saw him with his back to me, but clearly talking to one of the other bar staff.
You know, that's the guy in the band.
She said... I saw her kind of look at me and then look back at him and say, "He's in the band." Which, by the way, not an adequate reason to give me a beer if I'm drunk.
No, no.
I hadn't had a drink that day.
Yeah.
So.
But I can see, I can see there's like, he's here all the time, man.
Nice of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, geez, it's not like I've never come into contact with a drunk muso before.
Steve Agona's Bucks Party,
which was
12 years ago now. Didn't they just have an anniversary?
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
We ended up at Crown, and I asked Matthew Robinson to go get me another bourbon and coke, and the bouncers came over and said, "That a drink your mate's getting, it's not for you, is it?" And my response was, "No, wait, man, I'm way too pissed to have another drink. I think maybe you should leave." Okay. Shall I go that way or that way? Doesn't matter.
Wow, you were like, on the edge of Metastorm, weren't you?
Yeah, I could have pushed it a little bit back then.
Wow. I was talking to an RSA guy the other day.
That's a responsible service of alcohol officer, not the Republic of South African.
At the end of the long weekend. Oh, no, at the beginning of the long weekend.
The Easter weekend?
Yeah, and said... I said, you look tired, mate, and your weekend's only just started. He said, "No, I'm already prepared for what it's going to be." I said, "Yeah, it must be hard being an RSA officer here." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Because I get the best of these people. Like, they bellow requests at me, but they're good natured.
Yeah.
You get the ones that are swearing at you because you've told them they can't have any more to drink. And forgive me, but it seems like
your job actually should be redundant in the sense that the bar staff should be policing the responsible service of alcohol. They do the course, they do the thing. And he said, we operate against one another all the time.
Oh, it's hard.
He literally said the bar staff and the RSA people operate against each other. It's just fucking remarkable.
I can see how I know why they're necessary. It's because the people at the bar are so busy at the bar, they don't observe how people behave away from the bar. And usually, by the time someone gets to the bar, they're like, "I'll have two more pints, thanks." They can kind of switch the decorum on for long enough to buy another drink, and then they're
probably playing devil's advocate a little bit too hard in this case, in the sense that you've been at the bar plenty of times when you've seen a drunk person order.
Yeah, yeah.
Like clearly drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
Slurring.
I saw it Saturday at my gig where there were three guys who I don't know what they were having, but it was a mix of drinks, vodka and something, like vodka, lime and soda. And I saw them have at least 10 rounds in half an hour.
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were loud and obnoxious and having a ball. But people left. People moved away, right? And then I thought, every time they went for another drink, they're going to get cut off. They're going to get cut off. They're going to get cut off. And there were big boys, and they could have easily looked after the two bouncers that were easily taking care of the two bouncers that were working there. And it wouldn't have mattered how much martial arts training these bouncers had. They were much, much bigger than them. And that was the thing, they kind of knew it. Now they weren't being jerks in the sense of they weren't having a crack at anyone, and they were having a really good time, and they were trashed. And eventually they went up to the bar, and the bar manager said, happy to give you another round of drinks, something like, happy to give you another round of drinks as long as you wait another 10 minutes and have a glass of water. And they instantly went, we should probably go.
Right.
They were, the one guy who was kind of like the ringleader, who wasn't as drunk as the other two guys, was like, we're being a bit of a menace, aren't we? Yeah, and they were great, but they really were so drunk.
Menace.
And this is 10:30.
Yeah, wow.
This wasn't late, That doesn't happen at places like Crown. I've never seen anyone behave like these guys. Would be like, we'll take ourselves home. We're good. We're cool. Then I had a chat to the bouncers. Like, if we're here again, I heard one guy say like something along the lines, if we're here again and we're like this, just, you can come over and you can tell us. Which
Where
of course,
was this? Like what area?
This is in Hawthorne. Yeah. But yeah, it was, they were really well dressed, but with thongs on. It's really weird. I noticed that, which is another, I think the hardest thing about being an RSA at a casino type venue would be the fact that, equality does not exist, and you really can't treat a drunk man and a drunk woman the same. You're like standing back and watching it often, and just how they try and suggest, hey mate, you might have had a bit too much to drink, maybe come out here now. And 9 times out of 10, the guy's like, yeah, cool, no worries. All right, see you guys. They wave goodbye to their friends. 9 times out of 10 when they do that to a woman, it is mayhem. And like she just was like, I'm not drunk. Yeah, it's awful.
Huh.
Yeah. Occasionally the lady says, yeah, I probably had a bit too much. Yeah, cool. And often what they do is they just let them stay. They don't ask them to leave. But they ask men to leave. It's a really interesting one. Of course, because you can't manhandle a woman if she refuses to leave. Mm. You can't get 10 security guards around her and pin into the wall.
Mm.
Which they do with guys.
Hmm.
When guys arc up. It's a bit of a tricky one.
You are.
I've been known to be.
Should we tackle the next chapter of this book?
Yeah, let's have a chat about it.
What's the book called?
12 Rules for Life. I've added a 13th rule.
Okay. Bearing in mind that he reduced it from 60, I think.
Yeah, but so, I'm allowed to add one.
Yeah,
it's my book now.
All right, dude. Looks like it.
Well, my 13th rule is get different coloured post-its
For different chapters?
Yeah, it's hard to keep track.
Okay.
Well, for different points. Do you remember that film, Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion?
I've never heard of it.
Ah, well, it's Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino, and it's their high school reunion, and they make up a story that they invented post-it notes because they were scared that they're going to go back because they haven't made anything of their life. Yeah, so they go back. We invented post-its. I mean, they didn't.
No.
I didn't invent them either. Just
no.
Yeah. Just so you know.
You know the story, though, don't you?
Of?
The guy who invented them?
No, not off the top of my head.
Really? I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you in the next episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Next chapter's really short. We're going to need some other things to talk about.
Yeah. Rule 5. Do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's two non-parents having a chat about this.
I can't wait to hear what you've got to say.
Oh, what do you mean?
You've got some fairly firmly held beliefs about the way children should be brought up and treated. And
Yes.
Like, we're going to hear about them today.
I'd like to know what you think they are.
You've spoken about them on this podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd have to go back and listen. It's easier for me to read this book. We've got like 40 hours of bloody footage online.
What?
Not bloody footage, but, you know.
Oh,
just, yeah.
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 Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
See? The intro is correct.
Oh, amazing. You're good at the pricey. So
am I?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. In a nutshell.
See.
We need to teach our children the boundaries of the social contract.
Very good.
Is that good?
Mm.
Okay, thank you.
Good.
All good right. Night.
Next episode.
So he starts out the chapter. Is the quote, actually, it's not okay? His very first.
There's a few times. Yeah, actually, it's not okay. Is the very first.
Yeah,
yeah. Is the very first thing. Yeah.
And the primary example he starts out with is the classic child having a tantrum at the airport.
Yeah.
And the long suffering parents just dealing with it, or not dealing with it.
Yeah.
To the chagrin of everyone that is onlooking.
Yeah.
And one would presume in that situation that there are other parents who would say, oh my God, these poor people, I understand, this is exactly what mine's like.
Yeah.
I'm broadly stereotyping here, but to the other people who don't have kids, think, just shut that kid up and I hope they're not on the same flight as me and all that other stuff that goes along.
He sort of returns to it, doesn't it, at various points in the chapter. And this is something you and I have spoken about all the time, and it echoes that idea of when you meet a famous person and someone always says, he was so nice, or she was lovely, and it's like we're surprised that people, you know, that we don't know are nice people, and it sort of echoes throughout this chapter where he says, people want to like your child. Like, they automatically come up with the best of intentions, thinking, this could be a lovely child. Mm. And then if the child behaves well, then they're happy to interact with it. But if it acts like a little brat, they're like... and very much the story throughout is that if you can, a parent and a child's friends and people that it associates with, teach it how to behave and teach it boundaries and the rules and regulations of just normal interaction with other people. If the kid can comply and modify its behaviour depending on the scenario, it gets invited to more parties, it's more likely to, you know, to be popular and to get opportunity, which is the same thing as being an adult. You'd think.
Well, I mean, certainly one of his primary points in this is that we as parents in society have a moral obligation to teach our children those traits that are going to make them successful.
by the time they are 4 years old, when they start to shift their ways of discovering who they are. It shifts more to being peer group rather than parental, and that's really early. So that's his whole thing about needing to set those boundaries and those rules early before they are adults, before they're children, but before they're adults. Because it gets harder and harder the older they get until they become this age and don't want to learn anything about social contracts. That's me I'm talking about.
There's a really good part which I... probably what can I find? That he talks about like a retro... you need to have a good strategy of dealing with the thing in the moment, because you will resent your kid. So, you know, he has an example there of teaching his three-year-old to share. And so you want your kid, that kid, to share with the younger sister or brother, and you, in you, the confines of your own home, you can kind of like, you know, if you let it go, then what happens is later on, you might give the child a cold shoulder because you're harboring resentment over having to deal with that awkward scenario. And then, so the kid doesn't know it's done anything wrong in that moment anymore, because they move on real quick, and they come up and like, oh, look what I did. And you're like, yeah, whatever, because you're still pissed off at the kid for something it did half an hour ago. And it's like, oh, that's what they tell you when you go to puppy school.
I came back to that time and time again reading this chapter.
Yeah. And it's like, because obviously they tell you when you take your dog to puppy school, it's like, okay, so your dog's got, you know, dog's got the brain of a two-year-old child, right? And so you need to train it some way. And if you come home and the dog has chewed on your cushion or whatever and tore it apart, you can't punish it for that, because it doesn't understand that it's done anything wrong. It thinks you're punishing it for what's happened just now.
Yeah.
Right?
It's which is all those lovely cutesy YouTube videos of dogs looking ashamed.
Yeah.
Actually fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Because it's someone who's come home after a day at the office and they walk into the lounge room and it's this hangdog look because they're saying, what have you done? It's
What have I done?
Why am I in trouble for just sitting here? Why are you angry at me?
Yeah.
No. Oh. Poor dogs. And kids.
Yeah. So, that really kind of, it really hit me because I obviously I have a dog, but also, you know, in the last 9 years, I've seen my nieces and nephews at 2 and 3 years old, pushing the boundaries and not knowing how to share and then kind of learning. And also I've seen my family and my friends as parents just dealing kind of like, oh, all right, just be in this moment with this kid right now because it didn't mean to keep me up all night. Can't be angry at the kid for that.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, so. The be in the moment with this kid now. That's interesting. Yeah, because he uses, I don't know if this is a quote or not. No, I don't think it is. That we neglect the fact that as a parent, but actually as a human, that another person's behavioural tendencies compound.
Yeah.
Like you learn that behaviour and then you build on that behaviour. So it's easy to forget that when you're parenting a child for that moment of instant gratification where they do the thing that you're trying to get them to do. They eat their dinner or they go to bed. Forgetting that there's other stuff that comes afterwards and that all behaviour, all learned behaviour is built upon, be that good behaviour or bad behaviour.
There's an interesting so at the start he sort of talks about how I guess he's throughout the book so far I've noticed that he's definitely pushing his idea that look, equality isn't achievable because people aren't equal. So you know, that's whether it's equality between, you know, demographics or sexes. It's like we're different enough that there is no equality.
Yeah.
So you can have at the start, you can have equality of opportunity, but you don't get equality of outcome. And one of the things but trying to get equality of outcome is manipulating the system and manipulating the system to get the outcome that you want. Effectively undoes.
Yeah, it's inherently
undoes evolution, and particularly the evolution of a society. And the societies have effectively functioned for the most part for most people. And there's all lines everywhere that he's very quotable in that sense. Here's one here, like, catastrophes lurk on the extremes of every moral conundrum. So it's like, well, our society really does work pretty well for most people.
Mm.
It just so happens that there are, you know, in Australia there's 25 odd million people. So on the edges of our society, there is a small percentage on the far edges of all the things that we can measure of people, a very small percentage where the society doesn't work for them, right? But because there are so many people, that, you know, the population is so big, then the numbers on the edges seem high.
Yeah.
So when you report numbers, you go, oh, that's a lot of people. If you think about, oh, well, it's not a lot of people compared to
how many people
aren't being infected.
Everything has to be contextualised.
Yeah.
And people don't. And, of course, I mean, that's what clickbait journalism is so much founded on as well.
Yeah, and so much of, you know, so many things that we're contending with. Like, you hear about numbers and you go, that doesn't sound like a lot of people. It sounds like a few. Like, you know, when you think of, like, and that's what I kind of, people talk to me, you know, and they say, the news is so depressing. I said, and my thing is, yeah, the news really should be every day. Like, oh, every day, almost every Australian didn't kill anyone else. And almost every Australian drove the car responsibly. And almost every Australian behaved in a manner that lets the system continue to move on without imposing on other people too much.
He references that really, really well, in the sense where he's talking, I'm jumping ahead a bit, and I don't know if that's what you're about to get to.
What?
The idea that we're often asking ourselves the wrong question.
Yeah.
Like, why am I suffering from anxiety? It's like, why aren't I?
Yes. The miracle is not that, is
that life is terrifying and we should be just really impressed that we get through another day.
And also he says, like, as psychologists, we know why people have anxiety. We know why people have problems. We know it, right? It's the miracle is that people can just get through.
Hmm.
I was on a bit of a train of thought there, wasn't I? So what he says, which is interesting, at the start of the chapter, the very start of the chapter, he talks about how perhaps one of the reasons why there is a kind of a disparity between how we treat different children and how different parents treat different children, he returns to it throughout the chapter, is that a male's ability to affect the population as opposed to a woman's ability to affect the population. So there's two pages here, and he says, you know, there's Holocaust survivor Jutta Schwartz. By the time she died, was the ancestor of 2,000 people. Like, you know, she was grandmother and then great-grandmother and then, you know, et cetera. But, you know, when you're a man, you can father lots of children and therefore be the ancestor of far more than a woman can. And it was just saying that is an inherent imbalance of the a deep-seated idea that you can have about how important your child is compared to one child is compared to another.
Yeah.
And therefore, how you treat, like, your, what does he say, like, you know, you can create an emperor godchild. So, what's this bit?
In a different sort of way, I witnessed that in China when I lived there. The single child policy in full force, and boys were just were allowed to do fucking anything because they were precious and boys.
Yeah. There's this paragraph here about about this woman who pushed his sister off a coffee table, and his mother picked him up immediately afterward, but not her frightened daughter, and told him in hushed tones not to do such things while she patted him comfortingly in a manner clearly indicative of approval. She was out to produce a little god emperor of the universe. That's the unusual goal of many mother, including many who consider themselves advocates for full gender equality. Such women will object vociferously to any command uttered by an adult male, but will trot off in seconds to make their progeny a peanut butter sandwich if he demands it, while immersed self-importantly in a video game. The future mates of such boys have every reason to hate their mothers-in-law. Respect for women? That's for other boys, other men, not for their dear sons. And you see it.
Like, absolutely, like,
you know, I mean, I see it all the time. Clearly, that's, you know, this is one of those things where it's like on the outlet, on the edges, but to varying degrees, and it's quite,
see it way more often than one would think is normal.
Yeah, yeah, and there's that other thing of he's just a boy. It's like, well, yeah, yeah, but still,
yeah,
it's that's not a boy that you want. You want, don't want that little boy growing up to be that kind of man.
No. And it starts early.
It starts super early.
That's his very point. It starts,
which
really
is obviously
early.
Why, you know, we see a lot of the TV advertising that they've done recently about, you know, family violence and stuff like that, about, and they're showing the young boy witnessing violence, yeah, in the home, mirroring you know, father's actions and stuff. But it's interesting that they're not showing that kind of thing, which is the kid behaves poorly and then the parent doesn't reprimand the kid for behaving poorly at 2 to 4 years old.
Mm.
Like, you know, the kid in the kids in the ads are,
well, yeah,
are older.
Those ads, yeah, well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But they all also seem to be about showing parents how to teach a positive message as distinct from showing them how to parent.
Yeah.
Which I think there would be a huge backlash if a TV campaign was going to try and do that.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know.
This chapter really pushed some buttons for me.
Yeah, but you just said that. There's a thing that I did. There's a good quote. Each person's private trouble cannot be solved by cultural restitution, which is kind of what that ad campaign is. So everyone's personal issue. It's like saying, "Are we going to?" And like we were saying, we were talking about, you know, trying to fix things on the outside by changing policy, mm-hmm, like public policy on stuff, which I'm not saying it shouldn't be investigated. But the, yeah, it's, I found that really interesting. It's one of the reasons why following current affairs and events bothers me so much, yet I feel really compelled to follow them, because I look at the way things get dealt with and I go, why would you deal with it like that? I get really frustrated by...
Yeah, yes, I hear what you're saying.
And it's that thing of saying, yes, this thing should be investigated and we should try to resolve this issue, but it seems often that the way things are... For me, I'll hear how something's trying to be solved and I'm like, oh, it's...
Yeah, is that working. I mean, that's often government public policy, though, isn't it? Which is formulated by a committee and, you know, designed to do the most amount of utilitarian good, but also to offend the least number of voters. That's a terribly cynical way of looking at it, yeah. I'm sure. But
yeah, I mean, there's an issue. We do have a huge issue in the Western world of you know, governments having responsibility for doing stuff and...
but also being responsible for keeping themselves in power.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's an issue. As it says, catastrophes lurk at the extremes of every moral conundrum.
Yeah, he later on in the chapter, he speaks about Jane Goodall and her experience with chimpanzees and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But he relates that to the way our culture has developed, and also the way that that two-year-olds are stubborn and willful, yep, in the way of trying to forge their identity.
Yep.
Yeah, trying to find where they fit. And as well as the chimpanzee thing, he uses the analogy of it's like a blind man trying to find the wall.
Yeah.
So they do this.
Yeah.
They find the boundaries.
They push.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've just marked that out, the quote here of, children must be shaped and informed or they cannot thrive. This fact is reflected starkly in their behaviour. Kids are utterly desperate for attention from both peers and adults because such attention, which renders them effective and sophisticated communal players, is vitally necessary.
Hmm.
They're always looking at you like, for either...
informs their sense of self, absolutely.
Yeah.
Self.
Yep. Yeah. Children can be damaged as much or more by lack of incisive attention as they are by abuse, mental or physical.
Which is the other thing he talks about as far as disciplining kids, that the if your child does something that you don't want them to do, you need to nip it in the bud and not be fearful of
the feeding his son story.
Yeah.
And the one where he's babysitting the neighbor's kid. The kid, he doesn't sleep, so, you know, he just gets up and we just put Elmo on for him or whatever. It was like, and he's, the way he tells it is a story of like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, he's quite
the psychologist.
Yeah, he gets quite indignant in this chapter with a lot of other parents that clearly are doing it incorrectly compared to him.
Yeah, I think that's true. Did you listen to this or read it?
I listened to it.
Yeah, cool, because I've listened and read, and I read this chapter before I listened to it, and then so I already had his tone of voice.
Right.
And then I listened to it, but his tone of voice is way more, like I say, indignant than I could have even imagined. And
he gives an example where he said his, I don't know how old his daughter was at the time, playing on the monkey bars.
Yeah.
So she was 4 or 5, let's say. And the way he describes the other child who's on top of the monkey bars, standing on his daughter's hands with increasing pressure whilst eyeing him, Jordan Peterson, off. And then he said, so I reached up and I took the child and I threw him 30 metres down the field. And there was silence. And my jaw actually dropped as I heard it. And he said, I didn't. Which is not to say that it wouldn't have been better if I had have.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Really funny. I want to find it because it's hilarious. Oh, here it is. Yeah. That's right. It's great. He knew exactly what he was doing. Up yours, daddy-o, was his philosophy. He'd already concluded that adults were contemptible and that he could safely defy them. Too bad, then, that he was destined to become one. That was the hopeless future his parents had saddled him with. To his great salutary shock, I picked him up bodily off the playground structure and threw him 30 feet down the field. No, I didn't. I just took my daughter somewhere else, but it would have been better for him if I had. And as a moral appraisal of the story, he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his point being that aggression is the default position for animals. That's why he uses the chimpanzee example. And in relation to Jane Goodall, as that sort of background, when she was doing her gorilla research and chimpanzee research, she observed that chimpanzees were little pricks to one another and, like, murdered one another. Mm. And she didn't publish that research for a long time.
She thought she'd come in.
She thought she'd been the catalyst for it, by being in there. So animals, if left to their own devices, naturally resort to aggression as their means of asserting their dominance.
So do humans.
That's the point, which is why, as parents, we're supposed to teach our children at a really young age what's appropriate behaviour. Two-year-olds naturally bite, hit, kick, yell, steal.
Yeah.
Not...
That's mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had that. No,
you have
I
to
was
teach,
playing with
you have
it.
To teach them to share. Mm, yeah. That's mine.
Yeah. It's nice to share. Well, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, you can see it looking at first, but I don't care. It was great. Last Saturday, so I was at my brother's house, right, and so 5-year-old daughter, 3-year-old son. The daughter's playing with her little thing, and the 3-year-old boy's like, can I have that? Can I play with that, Liddy? She's like, nah, it's mine. All right. You know, he's like, please, let me play. Like, and she goes, no, it's mine. Like, wouldn't share. My dad rocks up, right? Just been to the market with this Spider-Man, this big, right? And it's got ropes coming out of its wrist, and you push the buttons on the back, and it shoots the rope that way, and it shoots the rope that way for the 3-year-old boy. Do you think the 5-year-old wanted to have a play? Of course you did. Do you think the 3-year-old would let her? No way. And of course, my brother said, well, you had every opportunity to share your toy with him for half an hour that he asked for it, and you wouldn't. And now he's got a new toy. He doesn't want to share it with you. Why? There you go. And the 5-year-old was like, what? You know. It was really, very much, very pertinent to that.
Absolutely.
He does a bit of a summary at the end, and he says there's 5 principles to child rearing. There's, 5 principles generally in life. One is limit the rules, and which reminded me of being in Year 8. I had a teacher, Mr. Nichols. Mr. Nichols took us for religion and English. He was our homeroom teacher, and he's the only teacher I've ever seen do this, and it was certainly the only classes I ever really enjoyed at school. And at the very first class we had with him, he said, right, we need some rules, and you guys are going to make the rules, and I'm going to be the policeman of the, so they're not going to be mine.
Sorry, how old?
13. So you're right.
Wow, he was young.
He was ahead of his time. And the moustache, it was amazing. And so I think we came up with 10 rules, which was it was a religious school, but it was very much like, when someone else is talking, don't talk, don't eat in class, the standard, how to behave in school. You get a warning, right? And then if you do something, for every rule you get one warning. So it's not like get a warning. If you break another one, you get one warning. These are our rules that we made up.
Yeah.
I think once for the entire year, someone got past a one warning and had to stand at the front of the class. And we were like, you have to stand up the front of the class facing the wall for the rest of the class.
Oh, you made the punishments as
well? We made the punishments. All right. No one ever fucked around this guy's class. Because we're like, we knew what, there weren't a lot of rules. We made them up. We knew what the rules were. And we were kind of in control of our own.
Yeah.
Own space.
Which is fine as a 13-year-old and not as a 4-year-old. And that, again, is the point of this chapter.
Yeah. But it's very, very, it kind of resonated with me in the idea of there were a few rules.
Yep.
But what happens when you have a few basic rules is that they kind of Venn diagram into almost anything else you can do to misbehave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, so you cover a whole bunch of bases and incidentally cover a whole bunch of other stuff. So he's kind of saying, have a few rules, right? And the other thing is the principle to use minimum necessary force. So, for example, Mr. Nichols used to just say, Dom, do you know the rules? Yeah, sorry. He didn't ever say, they were written up the front of the class. You couldn't even say, no, I don't know the rules. No one ever did that because they were there. We knew what they were.
Was there ever the smart ass that did something else that wasn't covered by the rules and said?
No, because we were just, there was no point. There was no reason to, because we'd already set the boundaries. Whereas every other teacher, on a whim, you could fuck around in their class. And other days you couldn't because they had no boundary set. And it would definitely be, period 3 after recess, we'd come in for Mr. Nichols' class and behave, and then period 4 before lunch, some other teacher would come in, like Mr. Lawrence would come in, and we'd be a nightmare.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, not so much me.
But there were
other kids who were just like, great, Mr. Bernard's here, do whatever we want.
That's weird.
Yeah. But it was, that was the thing. Mr. Nichols would be like, do you know the rules? Where the other guy would be like, I scream and shout at you, like, well, if you're going to behave like an idiot, we'll behave like idiots. And that's often the case.
Yeah, I mean, certainly kids, little kids, push the boundaries to get attention. Like, they're narcissistic little bastards.
But that's a reinforcement of behaviour. So if you're inclined to behave like that because of how you were when you were 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, and then that hasn't been trained out of you, you still like that when you're 13, 14, 15, 16, 35.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know many.
And sometimes it takes for someone to beat the snot out of you for you to pull your fucking head in.
100%. Yeah.
That never happened to me, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm still a little prick now.
Mm.
I'm not. I was brought up good. So, not too many boundaries.
Yeah.
Boundaries with a clear purpose.
Oh, hang on. Where are you at?
No, I was helping out.
Oh, cool. So, these are principles. There's 5 I've got written here in the book.
Oh, okay. Well,
I didn't write them down. I didn't make notes on them.
Oh, okay. Well,
I just thought it was good to look at the.
You go ahead. You actually read what he's written, and I'll ignore my paraphrase.
There's one here that he puts in. So, disciplinary principle 1: limit the rules. Principle 2: use minimum necessary force. Here's a 3: parents should come in pairs.
Oh yeah.
And this is a really interesting chapter because it just like he's a scientist. He's like, he's just obviously coming at this with his experience and what he would, the data that he would have, and just say, or data. We say data in Australia. Mm. Yeah, Americans are data. Mm. And I like this last sentence. I'm not saying that we should be mean to single mothers, many of whom struggle impossibly and courageously, and a proportion of whom have had to escape singly from a brutal relationship. But that doesn't mean we should pretend that all family forms are equally viable. They're not, period. And I'm not a parent. What do I know? But I come from a double parent family, and I know there were times when, as he describes in this chapter, like there were times when mum couldn't deal with me and dad had to sit me down and the other way around. Mm. And that's not to say it has to be two, like a mum and a dad, but like
of course.
Two people sharing the responsibility. And not just
doubtless, by the way, he would argue it needs to be a mum and a dad, even though he hasn't said that.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's doubtless.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think you can assume. I think you can assume roles.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think people do assume roles because he would probably talk about the yin and the yang idea that even like you might have two people of the same sex or gender in a relationship, but you're not both playing the same archetype in the relationship. No. I think that he'd probably argue that more.
Maybe.
Yeah. But we don't know.
No.
4th principle. One that is more particularly psychological. Parents should understand their own capacity to be harsh, vengeful, arrogant, resentful, angry, and deceitful. And then he obviously covers that in other chapters about, know your own proclivity to not be nice.
Yeah.
Because you will respond to your children.
And to regress to the easiest course of action.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you've got a game plan, particularly, he says, if you've got shared responsibility of a child with another person, you've got someone else that you're accountable to that keeps you in track. It's like I'm much less likely to eat a whole block of chocolate in watching a film if I've got someone else there going, you need all that.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Are you really going to ground him for a week? Are you really going to ban that cricket player for a year just for doing that? And 5.
Surprised it's taking you so long to bring the cricket up again.
Don't worry. I've subversively put it in. When you listen back, you'll hear. 5th and final and most general principle, parents have a duty to act as proxies for the real world. Merciful proxies, caring proxies, but proxies nonetheless. This obligation supersedes any responsibility to ensure happiness, foster creativity, or boost self-esteem. It's the primary duty of parents to make their children socially desirable.
Mm.
Yeah. That will provide the child with opportunity, self-regard, and security. It's more important even than fostering individual identity. The Holy Grail can be pursued in any case after a high degree of social sophistication has been established.
Hmm.
Mm. Tough gig being a parent. I'm certainly not capable of doing it.
No.
Yeah.
It's
which is funny because every adult, you know, comes from a parent somewhere along the line. Or yeah, I mean, is born from a parent and whatever path you go through. Amazing.
Holy shit.
I don't know any unfucked up adults.
No.
So they're all definitely...
Definitely.
Definitely got that way because of how they were parented. So no one's a perfect parent. No one's a perfect adult.
No.
So...
Until now, there hasn't been a rule book. I can't say that I 100% agree with everything he's written in this chapter. Yeah.
What don't you agree?
Very black and white, very, very black and white about how things need to be dealt with. The examples he gives in the book about parenting other people's children when they stay for one night, he manages to, you know, get one kid that never eats to eat, another kid that never sleeps to sleep. It's like, oh, fuck it, all right then. Yes, you're amazing. Well done.
Oh, did you take it like that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Even when he called the kid that wouldn't sleep a monster.
Yeah, down monster. Down monster. But that's an interesting observation that I have with other when I've looked after other people's children as well. In that, you know, you can have kids for hours and hours and hours and they're a dream. They're a ball. And then their parents show up and they're a nightmare. Like instantly, mum walks in the door and the kid's insane. You're like, what happened?
Hmm.
How are the kids? Great. And it's funny because I even remember being a little kid, being sort of, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, and my brother would go off to my brother, you know, at home was just like Tasmanian devil. He was just a whirlwind of a kid. Loud and, you know, kind of just a pain in the ass. He's, you know,
touching your microphone.
Sorry.
sorry.
And he would go to his little friend's house to play, and, you know, the mum would bring him back, and mum would be like, how was he? It was great. It's wonderful. Mm. We love having Alex.
He's always lovely.
Yeah, we love having Alex over. He's got great manners, and mum would be like, what?
Yeah.
What happened? So yeah. I think there's an element that when he talks about that, when the kid's out of its own environment, it gets to do the thing that a kid does, which is kind of start at zero with new people and new rules. So when you put it back with a parent, like this, we will have all of this established pattern of behaviour.
Yeah.
And we do it with that.
I think that's twofold as well, depending on the age of the child. It's there's a point where all of us become aware, actually, of how we interact with the rest of the world. And so you behave however you behave at home, and then you go out and you're in public. And you've already, you actually do have that sense of self. And in fact, given the way you and your brother were brought up, regardless of how your brother behaved at home, he actually knew what the fucking rules were and how he was expected to behave. And in a public setting, knew that when he went to someone else's house, he actually had to behave better, I presume.
Hmm.
I mean, that's surely what that's about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about having a different set of rules. It's like, actually, I know what the rules are. I know what's expected of me.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure about that. I think quite often when you go to a new place, you go, what are the rules here? Like, even as an adult, like, it's when, you know, if we use a gig, for example, you know, of like, all right, so what time are we playing? How loud do you want it to be? What kind of, do you want it to be like this vibe or that vibe? Like every, you know, every pub is just a pub with beer in it, but, you know, but we're playing the footy, so don't start till the footy finishes, or like, nah, just go on. Like, there are different rules.
Yeah, I guess.
There are different approaches. People want different stuff, and a lot of our time is spent trying to work out what's expected and does that align with how I'm prepared to behave? Which is why we often have those stories of like, can you believe I did a gig with someone so many shouted at people for watching the television while we were playing? It's like, can you believe that he thought that was all right to behave like that? And where I'm thinking like, why would you ever do that to anyone who's in a space of their own free will to have their own version of a good time? They're not having a go at me.
Yeah.
They're not saying, can you shut the fuck up trying to watch the footy? Right? No, they're not doing that. Like, so what makes you think you can behave like it? But people do, because their perception of what the rules are is different to what other people's are.
My own experience with my girls is that I've always said to their mum that I get the best of them. Like they, if they don't see me for a week, I don't get the hormones or the tantrums, depending on the age of which one we're talking about.
Sure.
I get their beautiful, best nature because they're just...
Yeah. Well, familiarity breeds contempt, and that's...
Yeah, and yeah. In fact, yesterday, Ali, we were talking about a particular TV program. She said, you wouldn't let me watch that, would you? I said, no, I wouldn't. She said, Mum does. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, but I bet
she said, and Mum's more the boss of me than you are. Yeah, you know what? You're right, she is.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they live with her.
But but that's interesting too, because, like, you know, if I had kids, I'd probably be much leaner. Like, for example, I might let my kids do this in the house, but if their friend was over, I'd say, no, not when other people's kids are here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've heard parents say, does your mum let you do this at home? And the kid's like, no. Like, all right, then you're not going to do it here. And then obviously there are other parents that go, well, you know, what you do at your house is your thing, but at my house you're allowed to do this. I mean, different people kind of like to. And there's rules again. There's like, how do we regard other people's rules? It's interesting.
You're interesting. We wrapped?
I'm going to hold my breath now until the next episode.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's nice.
I'm joking. I'm not going to. I'm about wrapped. What else have you got there?
A quote from him to finish. Clear rules and reasonable discipline matter for the self-secure, psychological maturity. Paraphrase there. And socially developed child. Oh, no. Look, not maturity. I'll start again. Can you edit this? Live. Clear rules and reasonable discipline matter for the self-secure, psychologically mature and socially developed child. Jordan B. Peterson, 2016.
Da, da,
age
da,
12.
Da, da. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's...
Also, he says it's okay to spank your kid. Good night. And discuss
amongst yourselves in the car. I wonder if people if they've listened to this, like whilst they're listening to it, they're going, shut up, what would you know? You don't have kids.
So many parents.
What I find funny about that, what would you know? You don't have kids. I find like the next extension of that is, what would you know? You only have yours. You don't have anyone else's kids.
Sure.
You. What do you know about being a parent? You just know about how to parent yours. I think, well, you know, of course, that's just me as a non-parent trying to defend myself against someone who would want to shout at me.
It's you being partly just funny.
Good.
Yeah.
Anyway, what would you know? You don't have a dog.
I've got the world's best cat, though.
Ah, well.
Thank you.
I've had a cat.
My God, she's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh. Well, oh. She molts.
Fuck, does she what? Oh, Dom's. Have you got
gloves?
Nice.
You got the gloves that take the fur off?
Yes, I do.
Does she love them?
She does love them.
Yeah.
But she's got is it a curry comb? No, what's those ones with the lots of thin little spindly ones that's supposed to get the underneath?
Okay, no. Fur? Yeah.
Yeah, I've got one of those as well because she's pretty naughty. Long-furred. Yeah, she's really naughty at the moment. And I think it's part of her getting older.
Oh, like going bald.
No, just being less interested.
Oh, right. So he's kind of, I could clean myself. What's the point? What's the point? I'm only going to die.
Is
that kind of thing? Do you think?
No, I'm not sure. I've got to make a veterinary appointment for her tomorrow. I've got to take her to the vet.
She should take her to the hairdresser.
She gets knots in her drumsticks.
Yeah.
You like in her drumsticks?
Yes.
And she hates her drumsticks being touched. Like, she really hates it.
Oh, maybe she hates it when she touches her own, which is why she doesn't do it.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe, because she's got quite fluffy pants.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Cat pants!
But I, you know, of course, like I used to when Ali was, you know, 18 months old or a year old and wouldn't sleep, and I was trying to reason with her about her behaviour. I tried to reason with my cat. So while I'm pinning her
down, like, monster.
Yeah, exactly. Up, dude. You've got, I don't know, every idea, no idea, doesn't matter. You wouldn't know.
No.
You didn't know him. pinning my cat down and, like, trying to hold her, I always refer to them as her drumsticks, anyway, trying to hold her drumstick down and then trying to cut this lovely bit of fur out. Meanwhile, she's, I know you don't like it. It'll be better, though. It'll be better when it's done. No, just, I know you can't understand, but if you could just
look at that over there.
But just trying to explain to her that I'm trying to help her, and it's very hard.
You don't speak cat well enough.
It's a shame. You'd think I would after all these years, because she speaks human quite well. Yeah.
Phoebe.
Oh, hungry? Yeah. And meow. Oh, hungry? Meow. Hungry? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not true. She's lovely. She's drinking lots and lots and lots of water at the moment.
Well, it's, you know, it is summer. It's hot.
It's not summer, and it's not as hot now as it was only 3 months ago.
There are only two seasons in my brain. I don't feel like I experience... I think it possibly is because I was born in the UK and I remember... you can really, really see the changing of the seasons, the transition from, you know, summer into autumn, deciduous trees, that kind of stuff. But where I live is just like... It's like sunny and then it rains for 3 months and then it's sunny again. Like, we don't... Like, I feel like in Lara near Geelong, we have, like, summer and winter. That's all we have. It's like grey for 3 months.
It didn't rain for 3 months this winter.
Last winter it did.
No, it didn't.
It fucking did at my house.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, we had bugger all rain in the
the
real Melbourne.
All yours.
Did you?
Yeah.
Should we finish up?
Yeah.
We started talking about weather.
All right.
For God's sake.
Bye.
Exciting news coming up.
Nothing better than an exciting water buffalo. Good news? Never mind. See ya!